What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Russia says it may be forced to deploy intermediate-range nuclear missiles in Europe, response to NATO's plans to do the same. Britain confirms the first fatality from the Omicron variant of the coronavirus in the country, as the variant is spreading at a rate never seen before. U.S. President Joe Biden declares a major disaster in Kentucky after the state was hit by a series of tornadoes that killed more than 60 people. Welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mies. Thanks for joining us. Tensions between Russia and NATO see no sign of easing. Moscow says it may be forced to deploy intermediate-range nuclear missiles in Europe, in response to what it calls a similar plan by the Western military alliance. Russian Deputy Foreign Minister issues the warning amid the country's standoff with the West over Ukraine and NATO's eastward expansion. Sergei Ryabkov says NATO's restoration last month of his 56th Artillery Command is an indirect indication the alliance is moving closer to redeploying INF. The command operated nuclear-capable Pershing missiles during the Cold War. Ryabkov has also warned of confrontation in case of a lack of political and diplomatic solution to the problem. This comes amid escalating tensions over Ukraine. Russia accuses NATO of deploying weapons systems in close vicinity to its territory. The West, meanwhile, accuses Russia of planning an invasion on Ukraine and has warned Moscow of consequences. Russia has rejected any such plan. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Brussels, Jerome Hughes, for more on the mounting tensions between Russia and the West.
What we've seen year after year is that NATO allies have carried out military drills as close to Russia's borders as possible. And there's no doubt that Moscow sees this as an act of provocation. And of course, then when Russia develops new defense systems or so on, the West accuses Russia of breaking all sorts of rules. When in fact, when you speak to independent analysts, they say that, of course, every nation has a right to defend its own territorial integrity. And we're seeing this sort of support for Ukraine as well. And when I speak to analysts, I've interviewed people earlier today, they talk about the hypocrisy here. I mean, the unwavering support that the EU keeps showing to Ukraine, when its own watchdog, financial watchdog, the European Court of Auditors, just last September said that basically corruption is to the core in Ukraine and at the highest levels in terms of political, judiciary, state-owned businesses and so on. The corruption is rife. So you have to ask the questions behind that. And if you listen to what the Kremlin is saying and what Russian ambassadors are saying around the place, they're saying that this is just about trying to provoke Russia to justify increased military spending, to justify a new EU army, to justify the expansion of NATO. And at the end of the day, when you have all of this expansionism going on, the people that benefit are those who are making the arms.
The UK is reporting its first fatality from the Omicron variant of the coronavirus as the country is battling with the rising number of infections from the new strain. Prime Minister Boris Johnson has confirmed the death of at least one patient who had contracted the virus. In the meantime, the British Health Secretary has warned that Omicron is spreading at a phenomenal and unprecedented rate that could overwhelm the country's health services. Sajid Javid says the new strain accounts for about 40% of all infections in London. The UK has imposed tougher restrictions since the strain was detected last month. On Sunday, the government raised the COVID alert level to 4 on a 5-point scale. It also launched a booster shot program to combat the infections. The UK has the highest coronavirus death toll in Europe, with more than 146,000 fatalities. London correspondent Syed Purizaw says a recent study shows the Omicron variant of the coronavirus could cause up to 75,000 deaths by April if additional measures are not taken in the UK.
It's difficult to really predict what's going to happen next. Perhaps I can bring you one, let's call it a prediction, done by the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine that's used experimental data. This was released very recently. They're saying that even with the current restrictions in place, and some of those restrictions are, for example, mandatory mask wearing, as well as working from home, which is what I'm doing right now, and a couple of others, we're looking at more infections than we saw at the peak of the Delta variant in winter last year, even, as I say, with the current restrictions in place. So it's really going to be a very difficult few months for the country. Again, as just to refer to the study earlier, you are looking at between 25,000 and 75,000 deaths between now and the next 5 months if the variant continues to impact people at the rate and speed it is at the moment.
Well, the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson is facing calls to step down amid a series of scandals that have already taken their toll on the popularity of his Conservative Party. Johnson's own ratings are also at their lowest in 3 years, following those scandals, including one involving a Downing Street party that was held during last year's lockdowns.
Back-to-back scandals are taking their toll on the popularity of British Prime Minister Boris Johnson and his ruling Conservative Party. An opinion poll shows support for Conservatives is down 4 points to 32%. That gives the opposition Labour Party a 9-point lead, their largest since 2014. Johnson's own ratings are also at their lowest since his party won a landslide in 2019. His popularity is 14% down in 2 weeks. A video was leaked this week showing Downing Street staffers joking about a Christmas party held there last December, while the country was under COVID lockdown. The scandal has already led to the resignation of Johnson's spokeswoman, Allegra Stratton.
My remarks seemed to make light of the rules. Rules that people were doing everything to obey. That was never my intention. I will regret those remarks for the rest of my days, and I offer my profound apologies to all of you at home for them.
The British Prime Minister has denied that there was a party and apologised for the video.
I apologise for the impression that has been given that staff in Downing Street take this less than seriously. I'm sickened myself and furious about that.
While the leaked video was the talk of town, reports came out about two more lockdown gatherings at the Downing Street, including one at Johnson's own flat. A probe is now underway into whether the parties broke COVID rules. The Premier is facing calls to step down.
Downing Street willfully broke the rules and mocked the sacrifices we have all made, shattering the public's trust. The Prime Minister has a duty, the only right and moral choice left to him. It is for his resignation.
Yeah. Labour leader Keir Starmer is strongly critical of Johnson too.
But there's also this basic question of trust, and that is broken with the Prime Minister, okay. And that's why he is unfit for office.
In recent months, the British Prime Minister has faced criticism over other issues, including his handling of a sleaze scandal, the awarding of lucrative COVID contracts, and the refurbishment of his Downing Street flat. That's beside revelations Johnson intervened to evacuate pets from Kabul during the chaotic Afghan withdrawal in August. Now the latest scandal involving the lockdown parties may be the final nail in the coffin as Johnson's popularity continues to plummet. More than half of those taking part in the latest opinion poll believe that the Premier should step down.
Iran continues to witness a declining trend in COVID-19 infections and related deaths amid intensive vaccination campaigns across the country. Health officials have reported 42 new fatalities from the virus in the last 24 hours. That is the lowest daily tally since May of last year. They've also recorded around 2,700 new infections in the past day. The latest death toll pushes the country's total fatalities to more than 130,000. The recent vaccine rollouts have been credited for the plunge in fatality rates. About 70% of Iran's population has received at least one dose of COVID vaccine. U.S. emergency workers are searching for survivors after a string of tornadoes killed dozens of people across six states. Authorities say that there's little chance of finding survivors 2 days after the tornadoes hit Midwestern U.S. Kentucky is the hardest hit, with a death toll of more than 60 people. Many of them were workers at a candle factory in the ravaged town of Mayfield. The state governor says bodies are still found, warning that the number could exceed 100. Relief efforts are also underway in Kentucky, supplying those affected with shelters and food. More aid will be delivered to the state, as President Joe Biden has declared a major federal disaster in Kentucky. Thousands of homes and buildings have been destroyed there. Twisters have also killed several people in the states of Tennessee, Missouri, and Arkansas.
The U.S. is stunned by a devastating storm of tornadoes that ripped through the six states of Arkansas, Illinois, Kentucky, Missouri, Mississippi, as well as Tennessee overnight. Strong thunderstorms triggered dozens of tornadoes that crumbled metal like paper, swatted down concrete buildings, and threw a freight train off its track. Among notable casualties are a candle-making factory in Kentucky, a nursing home in Arkansas, and an Amazon warehouse in Illinois. An Illinois resident explains how he was shocked by the extent of damage after he rushed to his mother's house.
The damage is worse than some of the stuff I've seen in war pictures, so it's pretty intense. You know, it's not anything that I thought when she called me and told me that, oh, all my trees are gone. I was like, I got here and I did not expect to see this.
The town of Mayfield in Kentucky was described as ground zero by officials and appeared post-apocalyptic. A restaurant owner says the town's residents have lost it all.
It was just, this is our hometown, and it's just devastating. Everybody's lost everything.
Rescue workers across the middle of the country are combing through wreckage for survivors. Scores of deaths have already been confirmed, and officials warn that the toll is almost certain to rise as they are sifting through the ruins for the missing. President Joe Biden is going to travel to areas affected by what he's described as likely one of the largest tornado outbreaks in the American history.
I'm monitoring the situation very closely since early this morning. This is likely to be one of the largest tornado outbreaks in our history. And it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy.
President Biden also said he would task the environmental agencies to take a look at the specific impact climate change might have had on the deadly tornadoes. A meteorologist says he has rarely seen anything like this tornado storm during his career spanning four decades.
I was watching the radar last night and I was saying, wait a second, this is December. How is this happening in December? This is the kind of thing you would only see at the height of the season, you know, March, April, May. I'd never seen anything like this this time of year. I mean, and you hardly ever see something like this in a career.
The tornadoes have left a trail stretching around 370 kilometers. The multi-state disaster has freshened debates about whether climate change had a role to play in triggering these tornadoes, which are believed to be quite unseasonal, and whether a warmer planet would mean the world should expect to see more disasters of the kind.
Moving on to Sudan, police have clashed with protesters holding yet another rally in the capital Khartoum to demand civilian rule. Police used tear gas to disperse the crowd who had gathered near the presidential palace. Sudanese have held several such rallies in recent weeks against the coup and a new military-dominated transitional government. The army seized power and detained civilian leaders, including the Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok, in October. Mass protests and international outcry forced top generals to reinstate Hamdok following a deal. However, pro-democracy activists are opposed to the Prime Minister's deal with the military. They cite crackdowns on anti-coup protesters that have led to the death of some 45 people since October. As negotiations on the 2015 nuclear deal are underway in Vienna, Iran says it has not yet received any initiative or any proposal from the other side on outstanding issues. The Iranian lead negotiator Ali Bagharikani says that his team's proposals, however, are being discussed in a positive and progressive atmosphere. Homolezki has more.
Iran's lead negotiator at the Vienna talks aimed at reviving the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, says his team has not yet received any proposal or initiative from the other side to help resolve the outstanding issues.
Both on the issue of sanctions removal and nuclear measures, there have been disagreements. These are clearly visible in the draft that was achieved following the previous round of talks. The disagreements, especially on the nuclear issue, are numerous and varied. On these disagreements, we have not yet received any proposal or initiative from the other side.
In the past days, questions have arisen about the drafts being discussed and whether the Iranian team's amendments and proposals offered in the form of two written drafts at the beginning of the seventh round are still on the table.
Over the past few days, we have had various meetings at the levels of experts and senior political directors during which the modifications, viewpoints and proposals of the Iranian side on the June 20th draft were discussed, and these discussions were positive and moving forward.
Iran says it would only go back to full compliance after the full and verifiable removal of U.S. sanctions. And while some sources say the Iranian demands are stalling progress, others, like Russia's lead delegate, maintain the atmosphere is positive amid intensive dialogue.
The important thing for Iran is that the current negotiations move forward and that all of the sanctions, the maximum pressure sanctions, are removed, and there's a verification process. And Iran really has to be compensated for all the damage that Western countries have done to the people of Iran.
On Sunday, a third working group focusing on the sequencing of compliance by all parties was held for the first time during the seventh round of talks. That was followed by a trilateral meeting between Iran, Russia, and China. There's been no official word yet about the duration of the current round of talks. Homolesky, Vienna.
The U.S. continues to face criticism for hosting the so-called Summit for Democracy. China says the event held last week showed the U.S. is a destroyer of democracy.
I've noticed there are media reports that the international community gave the summit a cold reaction. Videos of the summit have been barely watched on social media platforms. On the contrary, those showing the U.S. going for military intervention and killing innocent civilians in the name of democracy have gone viral online. It once again demonstrates that the U.S. pursuit of its own interests under the banner of democracy finds no support. The Summit for Democracy exactly betrayed U.S. true nature as a destroyer of democracy, while stripping it of its disguise as a defender of democracy.
The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman urged all countries to promote democracy and freedom on the basis of the UN Charter. He added that the countries should also advance democracy and the rule of law in the format of international relations. The Chinese official accused Washington of measuring democracy with its own yardstick. China is among the countries that were excluded from the much-hyped two-day summit. Russia, which also was absent, accused the U.S. of exhibiting a Cold War mentality by holding the event. Mainstream media also denounced the U.S. for holding the virtual gathering. They said the White House claims to be supporting democracy, but it backs autocratic rulers abroad and restricts voting rights at home. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Close up, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Trip to Ardabil province, a beautiful province in northwestern Iran. For your information, Ardabil province has many must-see places, natural hot springs, the spectacular nature, and tall, magnificent mountains. However, my today's destination is not the nature of this beautiful province, but rather I'm going to visit the ancient monuments of Ardabil. So, my destination is Namin County, and I'm going to visit the dolmens of this region. If you want to know what a dolmen is, stay with me. Dolmens are monuments belonging to prehistoric era. These structures are made of flat, vertical, and horizontal stones. Dolmens are made of two or more upright stones with a single stone lying across them, making the structure resembling a table. Dolmens are among the most precious architectural monuments remain from New Stone Age or Neolithic period. The largest dolmen ever seen is in Brazil, and the oldest dolmen ever recorded dates back to 9111 BC. Dolmens are human-made structures built in the areas of the nature where no cave exists. Dolmens used to have double purposes: a place for living and holding special ceremonies, and a place for keeping the dead. While some dolmens are located on the ground, some other ones are under the ground. The dolmens that are located on the ground were used as a place for living, and those situated beneath the earth were used as resting place for the dead. Dolmens of Iran are mostly located in Talish area, the border heights and around Namin, Chayrushan, Astara, and the regions edging north of Aras River. Namin County is one of the outstanding places which has dolmens dating back to the Bronze period. I am now in Namin County. This county has many historical monuments and tourist attractions. This region used to be full of trees and has taken its name, Namin, literally wet, because of its proximity to the Caspian Sea. I'm so eager to see the dolmens of Namin. I am now standing beside one of these ancient dolmens. This structure has a simple appearance, but is very magnificent. I have to get close. How could the humans of thousands of years ago move these large pieces of stone? And how could they put them together in such a careful way? And let me tell you something interesting. These stones are attached to each other with no mortar between them. Some countries, dolmens used to be known as magic, mysterious stones with supernatural powers. These stones were used for healing, putting a spell on someone, or as a charm for good luck. Some of the people of that era believed that there is a spirit inside the dolmens which empowers the stone. One of the most important characteristics of the dolmens of Namin is that they had somewhere for burying the dead along with their personal stuff. These dolmens are actually the ancient treasures of this region of Iran. I'm so happy for visiting Namin and its wonders. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Economic divide.
A major gas deal signed at the recent ECO summit, Azerbaijan, Iran, and Turkmenistan agreed to swap Turkmen gas, having the potential to show how Iran can become a transnational gas hub. Iran is, after all, located geographically in a perfect place. Hi, I'm Kavit Ahwe. This edition of the program, we will discuss how this deal came about and what it means for West Asia region. Coming up, Azerbaijan, Iran, and Turkmenistan, they were the ones that signed this natural gas swap deal. Iran's president is saying this will strengthen ties between the three countries. Obviously, that's a point that this government is looking to expand on. Next, we're going to take a look at how Iran can become a gas hub, something that potentially it is now. It can be a key gas supplier, and it has the potential of becoming a major transit route, whether it's gas or even oil. Another highlight of this program will be overcoming U.S. sanctions. Obviously, that is something Iran's president has said, that U.S. sanctions will not hamper Iran's interaction with its neighbors, this gas swap deal being one example.
The Economic Cooperation Organization. The organization comprised of all five Central Asian countries, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan, as well as Afghanistan, Azerbaijan, Iran, Pakistan, and Turkey. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, in his debut there, said member states of the Economic Cooperation Organization enjoy great capacities that can bring about economic prosperity in the region.
Mr. Chairman, esteemed presidents and prime ministers, the current era is the era of Asia, which is the cradle of civilization, culture, and rich values, and also the cradle of monotheistic religions.
And he remained true to his pledge. Iran entered a gas swap agreement with Turkmenistan and Azerbaijan on the sidelines of the 15th meeting of the Economic Cooperation Organization. According to this gas swap deal, Iran will get Turkmenistan's exported gas at the joint border to use it for Iranian provinces, and in return will deliver the same quantity of Iranian gas to Azerbaijan Republic at its border with Iran. In total, the gas will cater to the needs of at least five provinces of Iran.
The swap deal is one of a kind due to the avenues that this opens up for similar deals to take place. And looking at social media posts, it shows that Iran's natural resources, like gas in this instance, can't be kept out of the world market, including its transit routes. Well, taking a look at this comment, it says, "Whoa, very good news. Now it's on paper that Iran is everywhere and that all nations need Iran. Only Israeli and the U.S. are getting fire and heat. Best wishes to the Iranian people and government from India." Now, this particular viewer writes that the correct questions need to be asked. And the questions to ask is, who is earning the least from this agreement? And who had to recall their other regional claims and demands? In this case, it is the same party. Can you guess who it is? Well, if you can guess who that country is or what that guest is talking about, write to us with an answer. Our links and addresses are on your screens. All right, here's another viewer comment. What we supported Azeris against Armenian, now Azeris backstab Israel by supporting Iran? Maybe the correct question to ask is, this beneficial for the parties involved and Israel is not a party. Joining us in this segment to get some answers on the significance of this gas swap deal is our guest, Matthew Everett. He's an editor-in-chief at the Canadian Patriot Review. He's also senior fellow at the American University in Moscow. He's also the author of The Clash of the Two Americas and founder of the Rising Tide Foundation. Also joining us in the studio, we have Ahmad Saleh. You have been absent from our program, so we figured it's a good time to call you back.
My pleasure.
Thanks for coming. He is a political economic analyst and also, based on what I'm seeing, a fiscal and monetary policy analyst and an energy economy commentator. Welcome.
Thank you.
All right, let me first start with you, Matthew, if I may. We're looking at what has occurred at this ECO summit, on the sidelines of this summit, where Azerbaijan and Turkmenistan and Iran have signed this trilateral of what's called a gas swap deal. Tell us why this is so important, because that's the way it has been reflected in different periodicals and specialty magazines in the energy sector. What's the big deal about this?
Well, this is an incredibly important development for a variety of reasons. Number one, I think contextually speaking, context is everything. And looking at the world right now, there is a major struggle over what will be the operating system which comes online, replacing the collapsing Western unipolar system, which is in a terminal phase of collapse. And that's something that people really need to chew on if they haven't realized this yet. That is a defining characteristic. And at the end of a system, there's a lot of opportunity as well as a lot of danger. The opposing system, if you want to look at what is shaping that other operating system, which is the more preferable one in my opinion, and I think in the opinion of those who are participating in this trilateral agreement, is the multipolar system being led by China, the Belt and Road Initiative, and many of the Eurasian countries who are increasingly jumping on board that orientation. So far, the idea of divide to conquer has been the nature of the game, keeping people stuck on a monopolized resource like oil or petrol, and then getting various participants to fight over diminishing returns and inflaming different localized interests so that there are many fire starters within the entire Caucasus, the Middle East, the Central Asian region that have been induced to really just create chaos on behalf of Western manipulators. So we've seen this really burn the entire region for the past 20 years especially, and many of those participants, people who have been, interests who have been utilized by Turkey, by Israel, by the United States, have come to realize that they are ultimately disposable in the grand scheme of things and want to have a future.
Okay, thank you for that. Well, he looked at things in a grand scale.
Yes.
So let me ask you whether you agree first, and of course what your thoughts are as to why this deal, this gas swap deal, is made out to be such a big deal. Our guest has said that, and many other places are reflecting it as such.
Yes. As my colleague mentioned, some of the global aspects from a political perspective, which I also agree with all he said. Let me look at this event from another perspective. First of all, it comes after the recent unrest or somehow conflicts between Iran, Azerbaijan, and Turkey, which we witnessed. So it is a very good news for the region and for the stability in this region.
Our info news section is upon us, and there were lots of stories that caught our attention from this past week. So let's get started. Now, this is just bad news no matter how you look at it. The OECD is warning that Omicron is threatening the world economy. It spelled it out quite logically, that outbreaks could continue to prompt restrictions on people's movements, which could have long-lasting consequences on labor markets or production capacity and, of course, prices. It said the recovery has lost momentum, and it has cut the outlook of top economies, including the U.S., China, and the Eurozone. Moving on to our next topic, U.S. racial inequality, something that is plaguing the U.S. quite a bit. And this actually is not a recent piece of news. It was recommended by a viewer. So here it is. It's about how the racial inequality has cost the U.S. economy $51 trillion since the year 1990. The key drivers behind that, persistent gaps in rates of employment, education, and earnings, to name a few. Now, this is a great topic for a program which we will bring to you in the near future. On to our next topic, Palestinian entrepreneurs. That caught our attention. The title of the entry was actually Entrepreneurialism in West Asia and Africa, but not enough attention is paid to this. However, we are. It said that the West Asia and North Africa is increasingly drawing attention from investors. When it comes to Palestinians, from health to education to affordable energy, Palestinian startups are shaping their society. Finally, U.S. Civil War? Yes, you are seeing that correctly. A U.S. billionaire has that prediction for the U.S. His name, Ray Dalio, and he has said that there is a dangerously high risk that the U.S. could slide into a civil war within the next 10 years due to the exceptional amount of polarization. He said a 30% chance is where it stands of such an outcome because the rules of governance are being ignored in the United States.
Listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Hello and welcome to our in-depth section. In this section, we're going to review Iran's natural gas possibilities and capacity and see how Iran can be transformed into a natural gas hub. In terms of the proven gas reserves, where Iran holds 1,183 trillion cubic feet of proven gas reserves. That sounds like a lot. Obviously, anything in the trillion sounds like a lot. But to put that into perspective, and this is as of the year 2017, it ranks second in the world. When it comes to the world's total natural gas reserves, that's about 17% of the world's total natural gas reserves. Now let's take a look at Iran's geographic position from the eco lens. You're going to see a map here in a second. This is Iran. Take a look at some of the countries that are in the vicinity of Iran in terms of its neighbors. And there you have these pipelines, whether they're oil and gas. Now the reason we're showing this to you is Iran has the capacity geographically to have these pipelines to transport either oil and gas to different parts of the world relative to where it is located. So when you take a look at to the east, to Turkey, to Azerbaijan, which we just talked about, the topic of this program, Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, these two very important because they are landlocked countries. So they will, Iran can accommodate them. In a matter of speaking. And of course, you have the two big consuming economies like China and India, of which there are gas pipelines and oil that can be incorporated in order for them to become obviously large customers for Iran. So the geographic position of Iran here is very important, as just explained. Now, let's move on to how Iran can actually become a regional gas hub. That's not far from reality. Here, we're looking at what has occurred already. Iran has made forays into this gas relationship with its neighbors, like the Iran-Russia gas swap. That's in the works. Iran is ready to participate in the gas swap between Pakistan and Turkmenistan. However, a long-planned pipeline to transport gas from Turkmenistan to India is unlikely to become operational. You also have the Iran-Pakistan-India gas pipeline. All right, let's take a look over here at how you have this deal that divides up the Caspian Sea. This is important, again, because the Caspian Sea, being part of Iran, obviously is shared between countries like Russia and you have Azerbaijan. Take a look at these five countries, Russia, Azerbaijan, Iran, Turkmenistan, and Kazakhstan. The Caspian Sea, it's obviously an area that's rich in oil, gas, and caviar, of course, but in terms of the oil and gas energy that's available through the Caspian Sea, that also remains an option for Iran for it to expand, take the energy that belongs to it, and then again, based on the pipelines that we just showed to you before, expand that to its neighbors. Rejoining me in the studio to discuss this matter and more is Matthew Everett, the editor-in-chief of the Canadian Patriot Review. Okay, Matthew, so we're looking at Iran having the world's second largest reserves of natural gas after Russia. Now, this swap deal for Iran is important because it deepens ties with Azerbaijan and Central Asia. But in the bigger picture, what are the possibilities of Iran becoming and transforming itself into a regional gas hub?
I think it's looking better and better by the day. Obviously, there was a hiccup in 2016 when the energy deal, the cooperation between Turkmenistan and Iran, was cut off. This is now being revived once more, and you really need to have economic cooperation, a sphere of trust building and collaboration amongst all of the different neighboring regions, both for Iran's sake, but also for its neighbors. Iraq, Syria have seen devastation over the past years, who desperately require reconstruction. Iran right now is a key hub, not only because there is, for the first time ever, rail lines being built between Iran and Iraq. It's a very small connection, but this could easily extend with the help of China, increasingly, who is very much interested in creating stability throughout this entire region, into Iraq, into Syria as part of a broader reconstruction package, into Lebanon, which desperately needs it. And if you, I mean, just look at any of the countries right now who are not invited to the upcoming democracy summit, which has excluded half of the world's population.
Indeed. Okay, let's see what Ahmad Salehi thinks, our guest here in the studio. Ahmad, so you heard our guest there, Matthew, talk about this, and you kind of touched on this in terms of the not only infrastructure that Iran has and has been building, but also the fact that Iran, in terms of its geographic location, in terms of the reach that it may have, for it to be or to transform into a gas or energy hub. Yes. What are the possibilities of that, and how does that stand in your view?
Actually, taking into account that there is a strategy shifting in the energy sector of Iran, and that strategy shift is that Iran is not going to export its oil anymore, or at least for the next 10 years, because as I said, the consumption, the domestic consumption is equal to the production at the moment. So our neighbors also know this. So this paved the road for a better cooperation between us. And Iran used its capabilities in terms of geographic position and the pipeline network inside Iran that can connect all corners of Iran and the countries surrounding Iran. As I said, big producers of gas, natural gas, are our neighbors, and even some emerging new consumers of energy in terms of gas are our neighbors, like Pakistan and India. So this is going to be a cooperation between the countries of the region rather than competition. So this is the paradigm shift in the energy sector of Iran. Even in the crude strategy, we are seeing that instead of exporting crude oil, Iran is doing refineries, petrochemical refineries, implementing some petrochemical refineries plant inside the country, and exporting, like as Matthew said, petroleum or gasoline to Lebanon, etc., etc. Because when we export crude oil, those who wants to put embargoes and limits on these exports have a very easy job.
Great, thank you so much. It was a pleasure having you, Ahmad Salehi, in the studio with us, political economic analyst, fiscal and monetary policy analyst, and an energy economy commentator. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Economic
Divide. Thank you. My pleasure.
Why would Iran want to import gas when it has so much of it? Economically, it would be more cost-efficient for Iran to import gas from Turkmenistan than to build pipelines to move its own gas from the fields in the south to the north. With all of this natural gas, it is just a matter of time before Iran would be self-sufficient and export its gas as well. This could happen by developing unexploited potential in the South Pars gas field, the largest gas field in the world.
The gas swap deal that Iran, Turkmenistan, and Azerbaijan signed, is it really a big deal, and why?
Well, the short answer is yes, and maybe it's not just about gas and energy consumption, but also politics. We pointed out to Iran becoming a regional gas hub, but let's expand on the issue. First, the deal carries an important political message of reviving relations between Iran and Turkmenistan after 5 years. This is important because trade relations between the two countries, especially in gas arena, can be expanded. The other message that this swap deal sends is Iran's role in the field of energy, especially gas in the West Asia region. This agreement can fulfill Iran's plan to become a gas hub in the region, especially its ideal location for landlocked countries. In the past years, Iran has not been as strong in the regional gas market due to a variety of reasons, like competition. The TAPI pipeline includes Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India. The pipeline will transport Turkmen gas to Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India, respectively. The idea of the TAPI pipeline was put forward to counter Iran's peace pipeline for gas exports to Pakistan and India, a pipeline that was on the verge of completion, and Iranian gas exports to Pakistan at the end of the 10th government. The project was stopped. Thought that was it? No. There are more pipelines in the region, which shows the political complexity of gas. There is also the SCP pipeline, the South Caucasus pipeline, which was built to export gas from Azerbaijan to Georgia and Turkey. The Trans-Caspian pipeline, TCP, between Turkmenistan and Azerbaijan will be connected from the Caspian Sea to SCP pipeline inside Azerbaijan. Then, at the end of the SCP pipeline, a connection will be added to the TANAP pipeline in Turkey. This would give Iran more influence over Turkey and Europe through the Trans-Adriatic pipeline, TAP, including Greece, Albania, and Italy. Currently, the only missing link in the southern gas corridor is a Trans-Caspian pipeline, TCP, which has been stalled for years due to legal disputes in the Caspian Sea over investment and economic justification. Iran's goal here is to position itself as a key gas supplier and deepen ties with Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, and the wider Central Asia region. The new Iranian government cares about this because their position is a pivot to the east. With the coming to power of the Iran's 13th government, diplomatic relations between Iran and Turkmenistan have been revived as seen through this gas swap deal. And you thought this was a simple agreement? Please tell us what you think about this and anything else on your mind.
Iran's natural gas supply is number two in the world. Geographic location, check, both towards the east and the west. Infrastructure to transfer the gas, plenty that is there, some that are in the works. However, there are political hurdles to actually overcome when it comes to gas and the way that Iran is strategically using it. And it is those political hurdles that are key, with many coming from the U.S. Iran's current government is resolute on establishing friendly relations, like it did with Azerbaijan and Turkmenistan. For the U.S. sanctions and its pressure on Iran's neighbors, well, that's something that Iran needs to watch out for. That does for this edition of Economic Divide. It was great having you with us. Your questions or comments are always welcome. For Mikhail Tafley and the entire team, it's goodbye until next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat
or BAT5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.